Hey, y'all. My name is Ann Wyatt. I started my career in workforce development with the state of Kentucky in 2010. That experience ignited a deep passion for manufacturing within me. I started this show hoping to raise more awareness around the bright outlook manufacturing careers have. Join me as I sit down with some of the manufacturing industry's most successful change makers and learn how they're partnering people with technology. It's time to give people more meaningful work. This is Workforce 4.0. Hey there, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of Workforce 4.0. I'm your host, Ann Wyatt, and I am super excited and honored to have the Vlad Romanoff on with us today. You have seen Vlad's content all over LinkedIn. No doubt he and his co-host, Dave Griffin, they have their own podcast called Manufacturing Hub. It's so insightful, impactful, and technical. So if you're not tuning into that, you all have got to do that. Major must do. But Vlad, I'm so excited you could make time for the show today. I really appreciate you coming on my podcast and supporting me. I want to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself for those out there that may not be as familiar with your amazing work.
Sure. I guess I'll start with my formal education. I got an electrical engineering bachelor's back in 2013 and immediately began my career in manufacturing. I worked on the technical side for very large companies, P&G, Kraft Heinz, Post Holdings, before going on to work for a very small systems integrator. So learning what a large company needs to operate and then understanding maybe how a small business operates. I then went on to pursue my MBA, which I finished back in 2021, and then co-founded a couple of companies, one of which is Solus PLC, one is called Kerno, one is Joltec. So I do a lot of different things in manufacturing at this point in time, including some content, as well as you mentioned, through Manufacturing Hub. But ultimately, I create training materials to help upskill some of the engineers and technicians on the manufacturing side. I help integrate different systems, and I work a lot on the data and control system side with different manufacturers.
That's amazing. Yeah, I really want to get more into the technical content that you create. But anytime that I tune into the Manufacturing Hub, I feel like it's super technical anyway. You guys are always providing value-packed content, and it just blows my mind all the time. So I think it's a really cool thing what you guys are doing. And I remember we first met at Automate, I think last year. Was it last year?
I think we've talked way before that, but in person was last year. Yes.
Yeah. So that was fun meeting you in real life at Automate. And I'm looking forward to doing that again. Are we doing that again?
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely have plans. Automate is a really big, for those who have not been to Automate, it's a really big trade show in the US that happens every single year. There's a lot of, if not all, exhibitors or all companies involved in industrial automation. And so it's a great place to network. It's a great place to learn. It's a great place to meet like-minded individuals, to if you're looking to progress your career or otherwise. So we'll definitely be there this year as well.
Awesome. Oh, well, I'm looking forward to seeing you again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. Well, Vlad, there's always major events going on around these trade shows and events. And sometimes that involves karaoke. Sometimes. And I got to know, if we're out, like if we're at Automate this year and we're kicking it, what is going to be your go-to karaoke song?
Absolutely. I actually have an interesting story, right? So I certainly am not someone who's, partaken in karaoke super much in my life, so to speak. But in 2015, so while I was working for P&G, we had a project to commission machinery that was being built by this Japanese OEM and to bring it back to the US, right? And so my bosses ultimately picked me as the electrical system lead, right? I had a mechanical and a process engineer as my counterparts that would go with me on the trip as well. We flew into Japan and we had to meet the company that was building the machine in order to validate everything. And so how this ties back to karaoke is that every single night, they would bring us out to karaoke, right? Because for them, that's the ultimate bonding experience, just like it is in the US. But ultimately, for the Japanese teams that don't necessarily speak English, and obviously we didn't speak Japanese, it was this, how would you say, you get a couple of drinks and everyone starts just singing and dancing to these very surprisingly, and I think they did it out of, how to say it, out of building the relationship for us instead of just for them, American songs, right? So it was all English songs playing on the karaoke, and you could see the counterparts in the Japanese company who would not necessarily speak English be singing in not perfect English, right? But they were doing a lot of effort to build those relationships. So that trip was, how to say it, eye-opening for me. And I think that since then I've been to, I don't want to say many, I don't want to say hundreds, but at least a dozen of karaoke's, and it was always a lot of fun. I don't have, let's say, maybe a crown karaoke song, but I will make sure to have one by Automate. But obviously there's definitely a lot of classics that I'm more than comfortable to pitch in, especially after a couple of drinks. So.
Very cool. Very cool. Yes, I'm holding you to that. So Automate this year, it's going down.
Automate is going to be great. Yes, I think it's getting bigger and better every single year that we go there. I think there's a lot of our circles that are having a presence, so it's going to be great.
It'll be a lot of fun, for sure. But I think circling back around to the technical content aspect of things, because I feel like we go to the trade shows, they're always fun. We do work with the companies and organizers and everybody that kind of comes together and puts on a spectacular event. But I think we've got to give a lot of cred to the technical aspect of things and really what brings all the value to having these events like this. And what you're doing with the technical content creation, I think, is super key. But I want to know your thoughts on this. How does creating good technical content, like what you're doing for companies, like, how do you think that's going to impact the future of work going forward?
That's, I guess, let me maybe separate that question in a couple of maybe sub questions, right? So I think, going back to the roots of technical content creation, right? So initially when I had graduated from university, I was trying to learn as much as I could on the applicable skill side, right? So I think what happens with graduates, especially nowadays, is that universities teach them a lot of book knowledge, right? So you will learn, let's say, in engineering, calculus and algebra and signal processing, and that's all great, right? But ultimately, those are not skills that an employer is looking for. An employer in manufacturing specifically looks for someone who knows how to program a PLC, how to program a robot, how to maybe compute some supply chain parameters, how to optimize something with AI. And when I was graduating, at least, there wasn't a lot of that specific content, even very ironically by the OEMs of those specific like softwares or hardwares. So I just started, to be honest with you, putting out videos on topics that I could not find and that I had spent hours going through data sheets. And if you've been through engineering data sheets, you know how daunting and boring they could be.
Oh, yeah.
And to be honest with you, not even creating something like revolutionary, but just, hey, here's this 100-page document. You probably only need to know 5 to 10 pages of this. And here's like a 5-minute video on a topic that covers the most important 3 points. So that's how I started creating technical content. It's really just to condense the information that is needed for the skills that I was trying to learn. I was not even trying to create something for anybody else. It was really just to summarize. And I would do a Google search and I would stumble on some of the technical posts that I had made either on my website or the forum or the videos. Now, how does it impact the workforce? I think that different companies are realizing that people, first of all, learn in different ways more and more. Mm-hmm. And I can give you examples from our own space, but without mentioning any names, there's more and more companies creating these universities, like online, like robotics university or like SCADA university, where you can go and for their product, learn how it works in a structured way through either video or written form, right? Depending on what you want and depending on what the content is. So long story short, I think that it's becoming more and more mainstream to have a lot more technical coverage in different formats for these different companies. So I just continue on that same path. I think that to, again, maybe reflect on myself a little bit, I think that content can be either entertaining or informative. And I tend to be the guy who thinks of myself as the informative person rather than the more entertaining one. So I tend to lean into my strength, which is to provide value through, again, digesting some of this technical information and then creating content around it.
Yeah, no, very cool. I think there's a huge need for that. And I think we see that. I don't know if you've been, have you been on X lately?
I'm here and there on X. I follow what happens there, but not very closely. I think depending on who you follow, it becomes a, I don't know, a strange amalgamation of posts.
Yeah. So my X feed, I get a lot of drone activity right now. There's a lot about drones. I don't know. Okay. But I have managed to find like a couple of accounts that are just really super informative and really impactful. I think there's like a huge conversation about CAD recently. But I'm liking some of that content more than I'm liking the LinkedIn content at this point.
Interesting. I go back and forth on X. So LinkedIn in the last couple of weeks has also become weird. I don't know if you've seen this phenomenon where everything's 3 weeks old, but then yes. I go on X, and maybe it's because I've not curated my stuff enough that I'm getting a lot of, I don't know, people asking for work or people like doing like some web development stuff. So maybe I need to, I don't know. I go back and forth on X every quarter or so. I set myself a goal. Hey, I'm going to spend a bit more time trying to figure it out, but I've not, let's say, gotten the value that I was hoping to.
Yeah, life happens, right? You're like, Okay, I'm going to do more on social media, but I don't really, social media doesn't necessarily equate to in real life gains. But yeah, I think that's really interesting, the kind of content that you create. And thank you for sharing those stories with us as well. As far as like your own career, because you have a master's degree, yes, but you are a degreed electrical engineer. And I think you're involved in so many different things, which is amazing. I think you're a great resource for that. But when you go back and you look at your career and all the things that you've accumulated experience-wise, what's something that you look at and you're like, man, I wish I would have known that sooner?
Yeah, I've certainly reflected on that quite a bit, right? Because I've jumped ship more than once, and I've certainly looked back and thought, hey, maybe that was not the right move at that time. Obviously, I think dwelling on things is never a positive emotion, but I would say that the biggest lesson, right? And people tell you this, I think, throughout your life, you never really realize it until you go through it yourself, but your network is your net worth, I think is the saying, right? But ultimately, to bring this back to my earlier career days, I think I was put in a position in a very large company where I think I should have explored a lot of opportunities with different individuals and different departments and like networked with people a lot more before making the decision to move on. So I was, how would I say it? I was put in a position where I didn't necessarily like where my career trajectory was going. So I decided to make a shift. But I think looking back, I could have spoken to the right individuals and I could have pushed to make the right decisions that would have benefited me a lot more, right? So it's talking to the people within your network, but also talking and not being afraid to ask for introductions, right? Hey, I'm looking for some advice on making a move XYZ. Would you know someone who could help me maybe understand those nuances? So networking, but also, I guess, like taking reins for your own destiny, so to speak. So networking and pushing yourself to be accountable for where things are going.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of accountability. Yeah. I think as a young professional, you've got to really be in tune with that too. If you've got to hold yourself super accountable, and really those around you accountable, because I think your network is your net worth. And I know that's like such cringe recruiter advice, right? I get that all the time. Oh, that's just cringe recruiter advice. But I think if you look at your network and you look internally and you think, okay, I know this person does this, maybe they have some insights on this. And I've found that it really never hurts to ask.
Absolutely.
So yeah, really developing your network and honing in on that is excellent career advice. Was there like a certain situation that you were in, or were there like markers? Because I think a lot of people stay in a position where they're unhappy, like for way too long sometimes. And I see that in recruiting. And I think if we were a little bit more self-aware of that, it'd be easier to create like an exit strategy. But what do you think? What are some markers that you noticed?
And I was going to like comment on that same point, right? Because we can get more granular about this whole like network is your net worth. I think in reality, this can boil down to something like, let's say, the relationship with your immediate supervisor or boss, right? Ultimately, my realization as a young employee was that they're not going to always be in charge of pushing you forward, right? Sometimes it's up to you to take the reins and say, hey, you know what? I would like to be in this position come next year, right? Or I would like to maybe take an assignment. And again, depending on the size of the company, of course, I would like to take an assignment in a different, it could be factory, it could be headquarters, whatever that may be, or a completely different vertical, right? So I think my point is less network just for like finance sake, but also you can network and understand like where opportunities lie in terms of projects, in terms of different work environments, et cetera, et cetera. Markers, I would say, again, I think it's just having more regular conversations at the very least with your direct supervisors, right? Looking back at that early career, the first maybe 2-3 years where I've learned that lesson, I was left without speaking to my boss for a quarter, sometimes 6 months, because we had like different projects and I had a different group of people that I was working with. Again, like I've mentioned, I would have counterparts, but I was not necessarily paying attention to where my projects were aligning in the long term. Does that make sense? So that's where I think that's where the disgruntlement maybe starts to creep in, where like on the short term, you have things figured out, but long term, you're like, I don't know if that's where I really want things to go, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. Thank you. I think that resonates with a lot of folks out there. Yeah. For sure.
And it's difficult, right? I get this question from some people that would ask me, hey, you know what? I'm an engineer. I'm unhappy with ABC. Should I leave the job and start looking for something else? And I'm like, look, I don't know if I would do that again if I was back in my shoes. There's a lot of nuances to that. So I think it's important to sit down and reflect. And I don't think you'll learn that skill until you've maybe matured enough, if that makes sense. Or at least speaking for myself, I think it took me some time to learn that skill, like how to reflect on where I'm at. And maybe the things are not as bad or could be better if I speak to those people, right? As I mentioned, you can talk to people within the organization, understand a little bit better what could it be, what the next steps are, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that comes along with professional development and personal development and all of those things. And that can be a challenge that you just gotta grow through, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
But speaking of some challenges, you work on a lot of technical heavy stuff. Like stuff that I couldn't even imagine to try. But in your experience with your career, you've had to have come across your fair share of challenges and overcoming those challenges, especially for your client base, I would imagine. And just out of curiosity, and I don't know if that's something you really want to share today, but what's one of the most challenging things that you've worked on?
I would say in a general sense, to start off on this answer, it would not be technical. I feel that with enough time and resources, any technical challenge can be overcome, but the people challenge is extremely difficult, right? Because people how would I best put it, right? People are not always predictable, and people do not always make decisions that seem logical to us, right? And if you have a project that you need to manage with multiple stakeholders, you start having, again, the metaphor I would use is wrenches thrown into your wheels, right? People decide to quit on a whim. People find other opportunities, right? And it might be great for them, right? That's not the issue. The problem is that now you're left with this kind of project that's at a standstill with people above you breathing down your neck, rushing you to complete the task, right? So dealing with people on these projects has been very difficult for me. And I can tell you, even the MBA doesn't necessarily prepare you for those challenges, right? So I thought it would, but it certainly does not. And I was thrown into those kinds of projects much earlier, a few years into my electrical engineering, so to speak, journey. And that was, you lose nights of sleep, you get calls at night, you're trying to figure out who's going to have to come in instead of whomever. And I would say, again, to be like specific, I would say it's like line commissioning projects. So it's $20 million line that's coming into a production site. And again, I would be responsible for anything that is electrical, so control systems, any like from the motor to the sensor to the line that's feeding production line, everything needs to work. So it's contractors, employees, whomever that's going to ask you questions when even you have not the full idea of everything as to how it works. It's a huge challenge.
Yeah, I think that's always difficult to navigate. That comes up in recruiting quite a bit. And definitely the workforce challenge. You think about there are so many opportunities for people that it's you have to be mentally prepared to understand that this is your new normal. This is your normal. You wake up and you come in and somebody's quit. They're gone. And then how do you make prevent or proactive plans to overcome those challenges? I don't know. What do you think is the key to success in that for companies that struggle with that kind of thing?
Oof, that is a very difficult question. I think you can always do your best to prepare. I think you should never have, I want to say, like a single key person in any role, but I know that things obviously take priority, and so it becomes very difficult to eliminate, I guess, that risk. But there's always, in my opinion, there's always room for negotiation as well. I think that people, despite moving on or despite doing things that seem illogical, I think they're always trying to do their best, right? You just need to understand what drives them and try to negotiate. Hey, if you're going to quit, could you at least help us finish this project? Can you stay on a contract basis? And I've been in those conversations, right? Sometimes you have a key person that decides, like I've mentioned, to leave in the middle of a project, and you just need to sit down and talk with them. Hey, what is it going to take to maybe keep you on until the end? Or maybe is there an opportunity to do a pass down? And if there's absolutely nothing we can do, well, then you probably need to get on the phone with someone who's skilled in finding a person that's going to be able to replace that individual and get up to speed as quickly as possible. There's a couple of different routes. But I think, again, going back to the people problem, you also need to build those relationships. I've been in situations where a supplier no longer is doing business with us or with the company that I'm contracting for. And so if you've not built relationships with other suppliers that might be able to come in and help, then it's a problem as well, right? So those relationships tend to take some time to build, and it's important to do it proactively.
Yeah, communication is key on everything. I love that solution though. And I have seen success stories with the contract, offering the contract as a way to keep someone engaged on the project. And I feel that's a win opportunity for everyone. Of course, I'm going to sit here and say, oh, you should just get on the phone and call me and I'll take care of that. But in reality, offering a contract or extending some sort of solution like that is an absolute win for you, the business, and probably that employee. So I like that idea a lot.
And look, obviously, it's not as simple as you and I are maybe talking about it in a few minutes. In reality, I think it's a lot of emotions. It depends on what the person has found or why they're quitting. And it could be a number of reasons, but everything needs to be discussed or can be discussed. But again, I've seen too many instances where the person just leaves and that's it. There's really no conversation or no negotiation.
There's no resolution.
That's right. That's right.
Like, it's just so cut and dry. And I think, I don't know, I grew up in a small town, so that was not really the norm. Because inevitably, you're going to run into this person. I grew up in a town where there was a Walmart and a Kroger, and there you go. So you were going to run into this person eventually. And I think being forced into that smaller community like that really made you have to learn to communicate and resolve things in a way that I don't know that we do much anymore. It's interesting how society is
I guess my philosophy has always been not to burn bridges. I still talk to my bosses from like 10 years ago and 6 years ago. And for what it is, some of them have offered me to bring me back. And we sometimes joke because I would call them and say, hey, like, I have this interesting opportunity. Would you want to come work for this company? And then they would say, would you want to come work for this company? And we would just laugh. But I guess it depends on the decisions you want to make and what doors you want to close or open. But I would say to your point, I think that people do talk to some extent. And maybe if you burn the opportunity here, there, and it's not going to really impact you. But yeah, I think it's just not in good faith is how I would put it. But maybe it's just me. You know what I mean? That's my opinion.
No, I definitely think so. Yeah. For sure. We've certainly talked a lot about challenges and network and growth and all of that. But when you think about the future of work, and I think that you're closely in the know on that kind of stuff, especially for manufacturing and systems integrators and things of that nature, what is something that you hope to see in your future? And I know that you've got your daughter. Do you ever think about her career trajectory? Do you ever think about what you hope for her to see?
Oof, that is a very
I think about it all of the time. I can't help it, Vlad. This is the stuff that keeps me up at night. I'm like, what kind of world are we leaving for Phoenix? This is my entire, it consumes a lot of my time.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess like separate opinions, right? Let's start with, I guess, the workforce, I guess, like the manufacturing space, right? So my opinion is that I think short term, I think that things will get worse, right? Like I've talked to many individuals and I guess I see how things are going on the plant floors. I think short term, we will see more and more companies fail due to the lack of highly technical people. Right. I guess simply put, that's my thesis. And the reason why is I think that there's been more and more complexity in the tech that we see, right? From data being passed around to everything being connected to a very, I want to say, fancy dashboards, AI absorbing information and trying to make decisions. I think the complexity has risen, but I simply don't see as many engineers or technicians or people in trades graduating. Right? It seems like that level has stagnated and we're just not doing a good job at pushing people into those professions. And we can obviously speculate if social media is making it the fact that everyone wants to be an influencer or whatever else, that people don't go into science type of jobs, but that's just what the numbers seem to indicate. And I would say that factories are struggling big time to find people to support, right? Not even like forget integration and augmenting their technical prowess, so to speak, just supporting what they have going on. And I think we've only seen an amplification of that since COVID, right? Because quite frankly, who would not have left if they were closer to retirement? Who would not have taken an early retirement in that position, right? I think people have done that. rightfully so, we lost a lot of knowledge. And the I don't want to say the new workforce, like, it's just been a hard time to pick up the pieces. And we're adding, again, like, more and more data, and it's challenging. So that's my thesis on the negative short term. Long term, I think we will solve that challenge. I think that universities are slowly getting their quotas or limits raised. I think that the programs are getting better. I think that manufacturers are also seeing that they cannot just, the top five, let's call it, companies, and again, I'm not going to name names, but the top five manufacturing companies, everyone wants to work there. But if you're not the top five, you cannot just wait and try to poach engineers, technicians, or whomever from those companies. You need to be a bit more proactive at the high school level, at the college level, at the university level, right? So there's more and more, like, I see at the university here, there's now like a supply chain program because of the shortages that we've seen. There's now more emphasis on robotics, right? So I think those challenges, but again, that machine and the education system, it's like a slow moving wheel that's going to take like 5 to 10 years. I think we'll also see a lot of, how to say it, not smoke and mirrors, but there's a lot of, hey, there's like a certificate in AI that you can get, or hey, there's a certificate in like whatever else. And I think a lot of those will come and go, but the education system, like, as a whole, will take a step towards, I guess, creating more people that are capable of supporting these manufacturing plants.
Yeah, I think education has come so long in the last 10 years. I don't know how we could complain. Honestly, I think the educational providers have really gotten it together. And I know several different examples of programs that are in place now that exist that did not exist 10 years ago. And I think that they're doing the best that they can. And I think that has a lot to do with companies stepping up and saying, hey, we need this and we need that. And this is the type of training that we're going to need in the next 10 years. So for the companies that did that, I feel like you're definitely getting your value add there. I hope they feel heard from that, for sure.
As far as, I guess I'm curious, what's your opinion on that?
My opinion on what I would like to see for the future, or what I think we can do.
What do you see with the clients, right? Are they experiencing a lot of shortages? Are they seeing maybe a return of the normal, or are they still struggling?
Oh, yeah.
What does the future look like?
Still struggling. I think in the world of talent acquisition, we're having a really hard time. I had a really interesting LinkedIn comments type thing a couple of weeks ago, like right before Christmas. Somebody had posted on LinkedIn something about, dear candidates, stop applying for jobs that you're not qualified for. And it was the CEO of a company or somebody in executive leadership. So I commented on the post because I saw maybe some of the folks that were in our manufacturing community there on LinkedIn had commented. And I just raised the point that I said, people are going to apply for things. A large part of that is because they don't know what they're applying for in the first place. A second part of that is maybe they have dreams and aspirations of doing this, but they have no idea how to get there. And if you're really serious about having people come work for your company that are technically aligned with what your process is, you have to be the one that goes and gets them. So shifting that mindset still is crazy to me. Like, you're spending $75 a day on a LinkedIn job board. Just blows my mind with no results.
That's what it costs?
Yeah. It just really blows my mind that we're not changing our mindset from passive inside sales to outbound sales model in recruiting. And that's the way you make placements. And then on top of that, you are dealing with a lot of candidates that maybe they're not qualified to the level that you need them to be, or all of your candidates are, like you mentioned, are employed by top companies and they don't really want to leave their current position. And that's always a red flag to me too, when companies come to me and they say, I'll ask them what they're doing to recruit for their roles or who their biggest competition is. That's part two of my big recruiting questions, onboarding questions. And if I have a company that says our biggest competition is SpaceX or Tesla, I would agree. I think that's a big competition of everyone. But if I look at that company and then I look at the size of the company that I'm speaking with, I wonder if expectations are misaligned there. Versus if I get on a call with an HR manager and they're like, hey, I'm actively going to this job fair at this university and I've got these candidates lined up to interview. This is how I'm filling my talent pipeline. This is what I'm doing. And to me, that's a lot more of a proactive approach. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course, but that takes a lot of effort, right? Like, again, I've had to interview people as less so as a HR person, but more as once they sent us some resumes and we're trying to vet them. And it's tough, right? Like at the end of the day, like they get hundreds upon hundreds of resumes. And I agree with you. People should definitely aspire to apply to certain positions. But when we're looking for an engineer and it's someone who's a cook at a restaurant, there's a bit of a mismatch.
Yeah, that's like, not happening.
Exactly. But it's tough, right? Because you have to sit through all those resumes and understand what they've done. And you obviously, ultimately, you want to give people the benefit of the doubt because you need them, but you also understand you're not going to find the perfect individual. But at some point, you need to have someone. And look, I've been in companies where we've had an open position for 2 years. Right. And it was quite apparent, right? They were obviously not willing to pay as much as they probably should have. And they were very, not necessarily selective, but they were looking for someone who's matching the criteria of an entire engineering team. And it becomes frustrating, right? Because then it's like a snowball effect. If you don't fill a key position, then the entire team needs to feel the pressure of that because they're filling in. And then someone else says, I'm tired of this. I'm going to go somewhere else. And so it's just not a good thing for anyone. Yes, but I think it's the current atmosphere I'm feeling almost every factory that I go to be honest with you, that is not, again, one of those like top five that is able to scoop up graduates quite easily, right? I can name you many companies that are in that same boat, but yeah. Stuff.
Yeah, it is tough. And I'm not saying it's easy. By any means. And I am saying that it is hard and that everyone's going to have a lot of patience in the talent market. I think that the relationships are very damaged on both sides. Yes. Do you know what I mean? And it's not going to be there's not a Band-Aid for it.
Yep. I definitely agree. I think the atmosphere, again, like of jobs, and look, I've been only on the job market for 10 years total, right? Or in the workforce for 10 years. And so I think it certainly changed from the previous, at least from what I've been told, years where you get into a job and you're pretty much guaranteed an entire career versus now people are looking to move on if they're not fully, I don't want to say happy, but not satisfied with certain conditions. So they're definitely looking, but at the same time, again, like what are some of these companies offering that are not there at the top five, top three companies? And I think they should be able to answer that question. And if not, they're going to have a really hard time, right? That's the nature of it.
It makes me sad though. I want it all to work out. I'm an optimist, Vlad.
There's not enough people, but when there's not enough people, what are you going to do? It's how do you compete against them? How do you create packages that are like enticing? People don't want to work in like small towns today, at least coming from larger cities. That's just not for everyone. It's a challenge they need to overcome.
Absolutely. I agree. I think it's going to take a lot of patience. From everyone, I think it will be short term. It will be worse and then it will get better. So that's the positive, I guess.
What about for your son? What is your outlook there?
Oh, gosh. I think we talked a little bit about this
previously in some conversations, but I'm all about getting Phoenix on the track. He just got a robotics kit for Christmas from Santa. And I think he'd asked Santa for like a $5,500 cobot. And Santa couldn't quite swing that. So Santa brought him a robotics kit.
What kind of a kit?
It's really cool. It's like he built it, and it's got different things that you can build. It's called Robotics Workshop with Microbit. And I think Microbit's owned by Microsoft, but that's the controller that's in it. But it integrates with the iPad via Bluetooth. It's by Thames and Cosmos.
That's some kind of like a Lego and like a PCB that creates like an arm.
Yes.
A robot. Oh, it reminds me of the Lego, I think it was Mindstorms. Lego Mindstorms?
Maybe. Yeah. But I hope Santa did good. It seems to have gone over well, so.
Does he have a robotics class in school?
No, he can't start until next year.
Okay.
We're all itching about that, but he's very good with his Legos. But he's coming to me and asking, but I think it's because he sees what I do. He sees me go to trade shows. He sees me make content. I share that stuff with him, and I share our friend's stuff with him. Oh, look at this cool manufacturing process. And I think as parents, you have to put it in front of them and encourage that for them to say, oh, look at this. And then it is innately catches hold and becomes more natural. So I'm hoping he gets into engineering. He's very smart. He's very mathematically advanced, I think, for his age, which is good. And he started at 6 months old, taking apart my coffee table and putting it back together. So I think he's got a bright future. I hope so. I hope. I'm a mom, though.
To be honest with you, I still wrestle on the whole like technical aspect versus going and pursuing something like medicine or even like nursing for Luna. I don't know. I'm not sure. I guess we'll have to wait and see maybe the next 10 years where the careers are going to, what they're going to look like in terms of, there's a lot of AI speculation and talk and discussions. So I think engineering careers are going to change. I don't think there's going to be less of them. I think there's just going to be different. But I think working with people is going to be they're even more so important. I think there's going to be a lack of humanity, so to speak. So there's going to be a more demand for the human touch, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. And yeah, with birth rates on the decline and all that. We'll see. We'll have to see. Vlad, it's been very good talking to you and just catching up with you. I appreciate your time today. This has been an amazing conversation. For those that are listening, absolutely. Come back anytime. For those that are listening today that want to get in touch with you, maybe they're not already connected with you, what is a good point of contact for you?
I would say LinkedIn is probably the easiest place to reach me. So if you go on linkedin.com and you just search for Vladimir Romanov or linkedin.com/Vlad Romanov, you can send me a message. Happy to chat anything manufacturing related or otherwise. So just send me a message on
Awesome. Thank you, Vlad. And for those listening today, thank you so much. If you have a minute and you love the content here at Workforce 4.0, be sure to drop us a comment or a review. We appreciate getting those, and we appreciate all the love, y'all. And in the meantime, we will see you all next week.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.